Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, it's the Hollywood Life Podcast. I am here with my co-anchor, Ali Stagnita. Hi, Ali.
Hello. Hi, Bonnie. Very excited for this guest today. He has a new movie coming out. He is a star on Broadway, which is one of my favorite things in the world. And Mrs. Maisel, Billions, you will recognize his name. Bonnie, you could go ahead and introduce him.
Yes, and Mrs. Maisel is one of my favorite shows. Can hardly wait till the next season. Okay, but before further ado, let's everybody welcome Andrew Polk. Hey, Andrew.
Hey there.
Welcome.
Oh,
I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I when we just popped on before we went live, I said to you, it's like I'm seeing an old friend because I've been such a fan of Mrs. Maisel for so many seasons. And of course, you are one of the stars of the show. You're an agent, you're a good friend of Susie. You guys are always, you're kind of doing her favors. You have a love-hate relationship, right?
And I don't know exactly what I get back from her, but you know.
Yeah. She's the best. And we're anxiously awaiting the next season.
Yes.
You guys have been filming. We've been getting a lot of fun photos from set. Tell us a little bit about how that has been kind of in this post-COVID world shooting this next season.
Well, I have a little bit to do on this season. I guess I've done 4 seasons out of the 5. You know, the Amazon and Maisel, they put a lot of effort into COVID safety, like crazy amount of safety regulations going on around that. So they're really, it's quite elaborate what they do. Every time there's a costume fitting, you have to get tested. Every time there's a read through, you have to get tested. And then there's someone who follows you around on set to tell you when to put your mask on, take your mask off. So, but you know, we got through it as I did other shows. I actually did, you know, quite a bit of stuff during COVID. And it's kind of amazing the effort that goes and the expense that goes into that part of production, including Maisel. Yeah.
Are they still doing that now that, you know, that sort of the major part of the pandemic is over?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I remember I did some, SUV Law and Order right when things started to open up, and that was absolutely crazy. There was literally different crews for hair and makeup. We used to have a makeup trailer, a hair trailer. You'd go in there, right, and they do their thing, and then that same group of people would follow you onto set, which makes sense. They had you would go there. Everything was partitioned off with plastic. Everyone was wearing masks. And then there would be another entirely different crew on set to do all that stuff. There were zones A, B, C. There were arrows everywhere. There was someone telling you where to go.
Well, I guess the thing is that there's so much money on the line in terms of doing these TV productions and I guess film productions, because we're going to talk about film. There's just so much money on the line. Like you just can't have, a key cast member get sick and then everybody has to be on hold for at least 5 days, if not longer.
Right. Absolutely. And I have to say, I've not had a problem so far. I mean, I've heard stories where they had to do some shutting down for little periods of time, but in all the filming I've done since the pandemic, I have not, knock on wood, had any a delay like that. And you're right. Yeah, it's a big money thing, and they spend a lot of money on it. You know, yeah.
And this is going to be the last season of Mrs. Maisel, right?
Yes, I'm going to the wrap party.
Oh no!
Yes, there's a wrap party. Not a season wrap party, a series wrap party.
Well,
that's it. Makes me sad because, you know, and I'm sure you feel the same way. And I'm sure you feel the same way with like shows that you've been on Broadway.
Yeah, sure.
The band, yeah, like they become, yeah, even for people who are watching, it becomes like family to you. These characters.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think, like you say, I feel that definitely with the theater, like the band's visit. That was 3 years of my life with the same people, and that was very emotional. To say goodbye to that, you know what I mean? You really are. And I still feel like I'm family with all those people. We're in touch, and it is similar with the television production. Absolutely.
So can you give us any tease? Are we going to get feel like that storylines are wrapped up, that there's love in the end for Mrs. Maisel?
That is above my pay grade to to divulge that information. They're very careful about what they let everyone know. Even though I'm in the show, I only know a certain amount of information. So I hate to disappoint you, but I can't. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Well, another fun project that you have coming up that's been one of the like most long-awaited films of the year is Armageddon Time. It comes out Friday, the 28th of October. It has been doing the festival rounds. You've been doing the festival rounds, and it kind of tells the story of the director James Gray's kind of teenage years. It tells some stories of, you know, racial injustices and prejudices and back in the 80s. So can you tell us a little bit about your role within the movie?
Yes, to everything you said. And I play a character named Mr. Turkletaub, who is a public school teacher of 42 sixth grade students, including the character that James Gray's is based his life on, the younger version of James Gray. And I teach these kids at a time when integration was quite new in Queens, New York, 1980, sixth graders. It was a time when public schools really felt the pinch, so that there was a teacher like the character I play teaching 42 kids by himself.
Yeah.
It's a every lot of subject, kids. Every subject without an assistant, including Jim. You know, this was really what an impossible sort of task. And so the movie sort of tells the story of these two friends, one black kid and one white kid, a Jewish kid, who become friends. And it shows how they kind of go like that over time. And it asks the questions about why that happened and what moral responsibilities you have, even at that age of 11 and 12, when you confront anti-Semitism and racism. It's a deeply moral movie. It's a deeply personal movie. And this guy I play, Mr. Turkletaub, great. I loved playing him. He's a real person. I did a little research. I have a friend
name. Was the character's name changed?
No.
Oh, so, my goodness.
So I have a friend. One of my best friends is Amy Ryan. You may know her. She's a wonderful actor. And I've known her for years. And I knew she grew up in Queens around that time. And in the script, it says it's PS 173, where a lot of the action of the movie takes place and where I taught the character. So I called her. I'm like, hey, Amy, this is a crazy question, but the script here says PS 173. You didn't happen to go to PS 173. She said, yeah, I went to PS 173.
Wow.
I said, oh, okay, here's another. I just shot in the dark. Did you happen to have a teacher named Mr. Trickletap. She said, that was my teacher. And she sent me a picture of her in the class in fifth grade with Mr. Trickletap standing there looking quite a little, you know, just put together and a little bit like he was ready to retire. And so he was a real guy. So I had to do a little research on him and honor that guy. I don't want to give away too much of the movie, but he behaves quite harshly in a way that sort of propels the story forward towards the students.
Interesting. Yeah, so he's critical to the plot of the story.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
Did your friend Amy Ryan, did she like him as a teacher?
I was gonna say, did she recall that? Like,
well, she doesn't really remember, but she and I did a little research, and you know, we came up with it. The people that knew him as a quiet man, and also that he died quite early of a heart attack. And I kind of put all of it together. It's just sort of the tension that he felt. I think also I drew on the. I'm a parent of two youngish kids, who I love dearly, but you know, let's face it, you know, there are times when, you know, there's a certain amount of, I've had enough of it-ness.
Yeah.
I found it pretty, I don't know, for whatever reason, found it pretty easy to access those feelings and use them with this guy who had to teach 42 kids all by himself and deal with incorporating kids who were being bussed in and integrated into the school system.
So, yeah, which was new and which was controversial, and a lot of people were not comfortable with it. But I think what's so interesting about this film, I mean, there's many things that are interesting, is that it's so relevant to what we are facing today, the issues we're facing today. I mean, look at anti-Semitism, hugely in the news, just right now, because of Kanye West. Making anti-Semitic statements, and just
unfortunately, it really is. You know, it's funny because it's about a Jewish American family, middle class, lower middle class, and even they, who you know, and they are children of immigrants themselves, of persecuted Jews, and they are actually asked to ask themselves, what is their part in a privilege, even though they come from a place of discrimination, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it asks those sticky questions, doesn't have any answers really, but it really is my favorite kind of movie because it asks really big questions of all of us, you know, like, you know, yes, the Jews experience anti-Semitism, but then when you are facing racism, as happens in the movie, what is your moral responsibility, even as an 11-year-old child? Mm-hmm. You have to look at the world for the first time and start making choices. Right. So that's what the kind of questions that it brings up. I think it's really powerful.
And we're facing the same questions today. Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
Again, yes. Schools are a focus. The idea that you shouldn't teach critical race theory, which I guess is really, you shouldn't teach the truth about Black history in America. And, you know, talk about discrimination. It hasn't gone away 40 years later.
No. And there's as you said, anti-Semitism right there. Mm-hmm. There it is. Yeah. So it's, I think for that reason, really, but the movie doesn't hit you over the head with those things. It just really tells a story of him growing up and his friendship with this boy and it cleverly is set in a really specific time in our history, 1980, right on the eve of Reagan getting elected. And I think it poses, you know, that's the fabric of the movie, is that things in the view of James Gray, things changed from then on. Things became sort of, more superficial, and people just went by the wayside in a way they maybe hadn't before. Mm-hmm. The social safety net wasn't there as much as it was. So I think it's trying to say this is where things change. And I love the title of the movie, Armageddon Time, because it has so many different meanings. One, it's a song by The Clash that came out around then. But it's also, I don't know if you remember this, but around the time Reagan was about to be elected, he gave interviews to a few, quite a few religious stations. And he said, it may be that we are going to experience Armageddon time, which scared the crap out of a lot of people.
What did he mean by that?
Well, a lot of people interpreted it different ways, but whatever way you might interpret it, it was scary.
Right.
And I think James Gray is asking dark, you know, really, it's not a coming of age movie that is sort of a fuzzy look back. It's more of a clear eyed, critical view of his childhood.
Mm-hmm. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, something I found that was very interesting was Jessica Chastain's small cameo within the film. She did it for free to play playing Marianne Trump, and she just had her one request was that it wasn't announced that who she was playing and why. Why do you think, you know, without giving too much away about like the film and the role, like why do you think that that was the case?
And that's Donald's mother, right?
Sister.
Oh, sister. She plays Marianne. Okay. Marianne Trump.
The judge who became the judge.
Yeah.
Right. She was a district at the time that a U.S. attorney, I think. Mm-hmm. And she became a judge. I don't, you know, you'll have to ask her.
Yeah.
But my sense is that it was not only generous financially on her part, but generous artistically. I think she wanted James Gray not to feel burdened at all by anything, and that she was doing it as an act of artistic generosity. She really wanted him to do whatever he wanted to do. She didn't want to make any requests. It's my sense of it.
I wasn't sure if it had anything to do with like the role in and of itself, like that she was playing a Trump type thing. I wasn't sure.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get that sense. No. I mean, the Trumps figure into the movie, but sort of in the background, the lead character, the boy, goes from the school I taught him at, and he, you know, it doesn't go well for him in that school. And they decide to move him to the school, a private school, which is based on the school that Donald Trump actually did go to, that his father, Fred, was a benefactor at, and was one of the main donors of, as I understand it, supporters of the school. And so Fred Trump is a character in the movie.
Relevant to today.
Right. I think that's things changing. Reagan, people sort of buying into that Machiavellian way of looking at the world, you know, that started around then. I think is what's being posed there.
Yeah. And working with James Gray and like making sure that you were being true to his story, like what was that like for you? Was there any really pivotal conversations that you recall having on set and surrounding with him?
First of all, James Gray is a dream to work with in every sense. And one of the best conversations I had with him was at the very beginning. I asked if it would be okay if I changed one word while we were doing a take. And he said, "Yeah, say whatever you want. I don't care. I know the writer." And so he immediately gave me all this freedom to freedom in the sense that he sent the message that he trusted me. And from that moment on, I did feel free and trusted with his character. You know, there were a couple of moments I remember, because some of the things that happened are kind of crazy in this movie. And I said, and I remember asking him about it. And he said, "It's not crazy. This happened to me." Mm-hmm. So right. Having that kind of conversation with him was totally invaluable. You know, this is real. This happened to me. This is a really, he's like, this is a personal story. You had the sense that that he even gave a speech to all of us in the very beginning. He said, "This means a lot to me. This is my life. You know, I'm writing a really vulnerable part of my life. And, you know, I can't tell you how much it means to me that we're doing it." And sort of from that moment on, we were all in.
Well, I thought also like the cast is just, you know, so incredible. But, you know, Anne Hathaway plays your mother. And I don't think anybody... Like,
not my mother, but the mother of the main
character. Not your mother, not the teacher's mother, the main character. No,
right.
Mother, but to see Anne Hathaway in that kind of role, I was like, wow, that's so completely different for her.
Yeah. And Jeremy Strong plays her husband, and Anthony Hopkins plays plays the grandfather. I've never heard of any of these people, but I hear they're very good. they're amazing, obviously. I'm joking. They're incredible. I'm honored to be working with all of them in this film.
I just think for the audience, it's going to be interesting to see them in these roles. And, you know, even Anthony Hopkins, you don't really think of him as playing a Jewish grandfather.
He's incredible. He's incredible. I think one of the things, sort of going back to your question about, did you talk to James Gray? I think what strikes me about everyone, the big stars and not the big stars in this movie, everyone sort of was really blown away by this script and really was aware that it's an absolutely heartfelt, complicated, brilliant script. And everyone was on board from the beginning. You know, Academy Awards or not, I think everyone was just sort of ready to work on this and bring as much truth as they could, is the sense I got. You know?
Well, we're all going to look forward to seeing it. And, you know, so in terms of your work, you know, you were on Broadway.
Yes.
You've done stage, you've done TV and film. What is your, like, do you have a favorite? Is there a...
Well, can I tell you a funny story that kind of combines all those things?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's apropos, but I don't really have a favorite, but there was one day where I got to do both. When I was doing Mrs. Maisel, it was during a time when I was doing the band's Visit on Broadway, but it was before the Tony Awards, which meant that you were not allowed to miss if you were filming something, right?
Yeah.
You had to make your curtain. They wouldn't let you out. And at the time I had a wonderful director named Scott Ellis, who was also a theater director. Scott Ellis was directing this episode of Maisel. And I had a moment in the scene I was doing in Maisel where I have the scene and then I sit down in the diner. And it's getting later and later, and he knows I have to get to that show, and this I can't be late. And he says to me, you know, just for the heck of it, let's do one where you don't sit down in the diner. Let's do one where you do your scene, and then you just walk out the door, just in case. And it's getting later and later, and we practice that version. And then he kind of gives me a look, and I'm late. Right. I'm it's getting to be curtain time. He gives me like this look, and I'm like, I know what he wants me to do. So we do the scene and I leave the diner as he asked me to do. And I got into a car and I got driven straight down to the theater. And then I started singing on Broadway. I'm like, that's true. That really happened. It was sort of it was like in my mind when it was happening, I was thinking, wow, this is really the dream. And you know, the dream is exhausting and terrifying, actually, because you didn't know if you were going to make it. But that was a little anecdote where I got to use both disciplines.
That's a pretty cool story.
It's true.
You don't get much time to like switch characters either, like get into the headspace.
You had the car ride. You had the car ride to vocalize. And,
you had to get the Israeli accent on in the car.
Yes, you just have to do it quickly, you know.
Absolutely. And then you do have another, you have an indie film coming out on the way, Peas and Carrots.
Yeah, there's a couple movies coming out. There's a movie I just did called Peas and Carrots. There's another movie that just got distribution rights called Space Oddity, which is directed by Kira Sedgwick, and Kevin Bacon is in it, and it's a lovely independent movie that I did with her. And
what's that one about? I love the title.
It's about a kid in his 20s who, for whatever reason, has experienced loss and has decided he wants to go to Mars. And he joins a fringy kind of group that can promise that we're actually going to go to Mars sooner than NASA thinks we can. And he's making sincere plans to leave and go to Mars and leave his life behind. And I play the sort of middle-aged guy who's just so sick of his family that he's decided he wants to go to Mars. And it's not a well thought out organization.
And you can't come back once you go. That's the
thing. Yeah. There's that whole thing of like, you're stuck on Mars. But it's more about what he's emotionally going through, this young man. Then there's another movie that I did which is an untitled Cabrini film I did with John Lithgow and David Morse, which is in post-production right now, which was fascinating. It's about Sister Cabrini. It's all set in the 19th century Tammany Hall, New York. I play the second most powerful guy in the New York City government, which meant he's completely corrupt. And that was so much fun to do. So those are all sort of on their way.
Are there like certain stories or genres that you really want to tell, like at this stage in your career, over others, like things that, you know, similar to like Armageddon time, but actually like comment on things going on in the world?
Well, you know, having had that experience with Armageddon time, I loved being able to tell a story that's true. It just pushed me to make sure that I was being as true as I could be and honoring that this was a real person and a real circumstance. So I'd love to do more work like that because it was complex. I think there are going to be people who come away from the movie thinking I was a pretty bad guy. But that wasn't how I approached it at all. I approached it as a teacher in really extreme circumstances, doing the best he could.
Yeah, I mean, you sound very empathetic to the character.
Yeah.
It was not my job
to judge him. Right. But
right.
Yeah, and sure, I'd love to play more like that. But it was also really fun doing period pieces. It was just like, it appeals to the little child in you that fell in love with acting, with the costumes. And I had a big top hat and a strange mustache. And, you know, it really does help you get into the style of what you're doing. And that's a lot of fun to do.
Sure. Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're really excited. So the movie comes out like limited.
Friday.
On Friday, this Friday, the 28th, and then nationwide, November 11th. So everybody.
November 4th. Yeah.
Amazing.
Nationwide, November 4th, limited this Friday,
the 28th. Friday.
Yeah.
Huge. Well, thank you so much again for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Yes, really great to meet you.
Thank you. So interesting. And you know, I think that the film just sounds wonderful. Can't wait to see it. And raises, you know, such interesting subjects at a totally relevant time.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and good luck with all your other projects that we'll look forward to as well.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you guys.
Thank you. You as well, Andrew. Thanks, guys, for listening.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.